That was Patriots offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt on Thursday, very hopeful that things were trending in a positive direction for Drake May, Patriots rookie quarterback, who is still, as of Gerard Mayo talking to the media today, in the NFL concussion protocol. But there is also still a possibility that he could clear protocol and be available on Sunday against the Titans in Tennessee. And to talk about that very thing, joining us here on WEEI's afternoon show is a friend of the program and a friend of the Six Rings podcast, joining me at Jumbo Heart alongside Nick Fitzy Stevens. It's Mike Giardi. Michael Giardi, I have to ask you right away, because we've been debating it for multiple days. If Drake May is indeed cleared from the concussion protocol, would you play him on Sunday?
First of all, I'd like to say that I think I'm the best friend of the program.
I agree.
Let's start there, not just a friend, but best friend. Yes, I play him. Absolutely. 100%. Fitzy's smoking something funny over there. Like, if he's cleared medically, and like I reported earlier in the week, he showed no ill effects, was feeling no ill effects from the hit on Sunday, Monday or Tuesday, then, like, what are you doing? Yeah, how are you going to tell the kid that he can't play when he checks out fine? And how are you going to tell the team, who has clearly been energized by him, clearly has a belief in him, despite him being here for, you know, just a handful of months and three starts, only of two which he completed? How do you tell them, hey, you know what, he's clear, but we're not going to play him? Like, it's not a sprained ankle. Like, I understand there's things that go into it, and you want to be cautious, but if they're following the protocol and the kid says he feels good and he's being honest with you, then you got to play him.
Yeah, but sometimes, Mike, you know this just from watching football, parenting, et cetera, sometimes you have to get in the way of somebody for their own best interests. And when it comes to something, you know, not to be that guy, but comparing a potential sprained ankle to a concussion, whatever grade or to whatever severity he sustained it, if he was even truly concussed, you could still even be in the protocol and not necessarily be that dinged up. You know, the way to me, if I were in this situation, I would say the reason why we're sitting him is because you're going to ride the positive momentum that you got from Brissett in the fourth quarter last week, and that this is a long-haul decision. Like, you're playing to win this game on Sunday because they're going one game at a time as they try to actually develop winning ways, learn to win, and set a culture and tone in Mayo's tenure. But at the same time, you know, you have to look at the totality of Drake May. This is a long game you're in.
Feels like you're turning into a bit of a mamby-pamby.
Wow. Hey, Troy Aikman, you want to tell me to take the dress off while we're at it?
I don't need to risk getting canceled. Troy's made enough money in his lifetime that if he got canceled, he'd be just fine. Me, on the other hand, I have two kids in college right now. I'm not messing with that. I understand what you're saying,
right?
But you're looking at Elliot Wolf is being judged on this roster. Gerard Mayo is being judged by the team that he's putting out there and how competitive, or quite frankly, for five of the six previous weeks, or whatever it was, four of the six previous weeks, they weren't competitive at all. Like, Drake May gives them that juice. And I know, yes, they lost by 20 to the Texans when he started the first game, and I know they lost by double digits again in Jacksonville, but there's something about him, and you could feel it in the stadium when he went out and Jacoby went in. You could feel it in the crowd. You could feel it in the team, though. And to their credit, they were able to sort of right the ship in the second half. But you're playing a risky game. You've seen Jacoby, and you saw what it looked like with Jacoby. And do you want to take the goodwill that you felt from beating the Jets and turn around and go lose to a team that, aside from Carolina, has been by far and away the worst? You were playing bad. You were in the running for a little while, the Patriots. But Tennessee is a complete dumpster fire right now. I was on Tennessee radio earlier today, and they're like wondering, is this a one and done for Brian Callahan?
Oh, yeah, he's coming off a 6-win season, no less, too, Mike, and now they're 1-6, and I don't see their upward trajectory at all. And we thought the Patriots were banged up. Have you seen their injury report? Holy smokes.
Yeah, it was not great for them at all. And, like, I was thinking to myself, well, like, look, if Sweat plays, Sweat alongside Simmons on the D-line, like, it's going to have a hard time running the football again. So then you're turning them into a one-dimensional team, and if Brissett's the one dimension that you're bringing a quarterback, like, there's a path there. I mean, look, there's a path anyways, because it's not like you're light years ahead of them in terms of your roster and your talent base, but that would change things if Sweat doesn't play. And there's obviously the Ridley thing. I mean, it sounds like Levis is going to get the start, which they were actually – You know, Mason Rudolph has been terrible, actually maybe worse than Levis was, and there was cries for Levis to be benched. So, yeah, they're a mess. They're a wayward ship right now.
A group that was a mess as of a week ago, hell, as of Sunday, was the Patriots wide receiver group. But we hear Gerard Mayo today talking about a good week on the practice field, not a lot of balls hitting the turf. I don't want to ask you if you believe him, but do you think that group is capable of a relatively noticeable and swift turnaround? Could they get out there on Sunday with Drake May and suddenly you got two or three guys that are hauling in four or five passes and there's some consistency, fluidity? Do you think we could be on the precipice of a turnaround for that wide receiver room?
The way you're defining turnaround, yes, because there were four or five balls that should have been caught, like, no question. Like, if you want to say one or two of them, like, hey, if Bourne had made that back shoulder catch, that would have been he should have caught it, hit him in his hands, but like, that would have been a tough catch. But in general, like, those are some easy throws to mess up. Even Booty, the slant that he dropped that was behind him, you're like, oh, well, that's a bad throw. No, well, Booty was supposed to sit in the zone, and the throw would have hit him right in the numbers.
Right.
So they've got to clean up their act. We get into this thing now. It's like, is this big play Booty? And like, okay, you know, a guy makes a play here and he makes a play there, but then there's 50 other plays in the game that he's running the wrong route or he's not making. And we know Polk, when we last saw him, he was a mess and has been for a better part of the year. So do I think Jalen Polk's that kind of player? No, I think he's a better player than that, but he's got to show it. They've all got to show it at this point.
Mike, earlier this week, one of our fellow beat writers here, Taylor Kyles over at CLNS, put out a tweet of the players that have exceeded his expectations on the season, and it sort of got me thinking that there are a lot of guys that we had never really heard of before on this team now, the ragtag tatters of Patriots football that they put together. They're really kind of a rogue squad at this point. Who would you say, I'm just kind of curious, like offensively and defensively, who's playing above pay grade or above expectations now that's kind of helping them, that helped them win last week and are some of the bright spots as we look to the midpoint and then subsequently the second half of the season for you?
So I wouldn't say that Anfernee Jennings is exceeding my expectations because I thought he was really good last year. And I think he's done the same thing this year. Like, for all their problems in run defense over the previous 5 weeks and actually even into the Jets game, don't forget the Jets rushed for over 100 yards, he's been their best front seven guy. Week in and week out, he does his job. He does it really well. He's obviously going to get more run as a pass rusher, it seems, and he did this past weekend because they traded Uche. But he's been someone to me that, like, that contract is – I mean, I understand it's an edge setter and run stopper. You don't get paid a ton of money. But, like, he's just a damn good football player. He's really – accountable for what he does, and he pretty much shows that on tape every single play. So he's someone that I would just say, like, he's just having a really nice year, and he's not going to get the crazy counting stats, so no one's going to really talk about him, but he's a good football player for him. He should be going forward. Offensively, I've liked Vedarian Lowe. Now, he hasn't been out there a ton because he keeps getting hurt.
Oh boy. I didn't like the answer from Gerard Mayo today when he was asked, could he be the long-term answer at left tackle? No. How about no? And he said yes.
Well, you need an answer, Andy.
Yeah, and go find a real answer. He might be named Will Campbell or some stud. No disrespect to Lowe, but it's like, because he hasn't sucked, everybody has fallen in love with him. Because all the other options sucked or quit or left the team. Like, him just being competitive somehow has landed him this opportunity, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but that answer really kind of concerned
you did.
Me today. Yeah, I did.
We've gone from suck to low.
Yeah, I meant so much lower.
Look, I'm not telling you that he's been great. I'm just saying that he stabilized the position, and it's funny because remember when he sort of became the guy during August, and then when he got hurt late in August, and you're like, wait, does this team really miss Vedarian Lowe? And the answer was, yeah, the team really misses Vedarian Lowe. Now, again, that speaks to the overall tackle play that they've gotten throughout the course of the summer and into the fall here. But I think he's done a reasonable job at that position. I think he's at least shown to you that even if they were to do what you said, Andy, and go get a left tackle in the first round, if they're picking in the top 5 or 10, and that's what they do, and I would be perfectly fine with that because they've had a hard time answering that position other than the one rogue year they got from Trent Brown over the last however many years since Nate Solder was any good. You know, like that's been a big problem for them. But at least Lowe has showed you that moving forward, he is someone that, if this continues, he continues on this track, that he is someone that can be a serviceable, useful player for you, whether it be a starting right tackle, whether it be a swing tackle. We know you need those guys. I mean, pretty much never does any team make it through a full season without their injury, you know, without their offensive line getting banged up. So to have that kind of piece, again, it's more of a depth piece than it is a starring role. But I think he's done what he's needed to do when he's been out there,
like a Cam Fleming type.
Yeah. I actually think he's a little bit. Well, I mean, Cam played for a long time, so I shouldn't.
Yeah.
I think he's got a little bit more of a higher ceiling. But again, we're not talking about. I'm not agreeing with Gerard. I don't think.
Okay.
I would
good.
Say, yeah, he's my left tackle.
So we got a big Tuesday coming up after you vote for Trump, Mike. What will you be writing about how the Patriots handled the trade deadline?
I'll take baited questions for $400, Alex.
I still think another piece is
going to. He didn't deny
it. Another piece is going to move. I'm not even touching any politics. It is
no,
like,
no, it's great. It'll load the phones up for the rest of the day. I can't wait to read the text line. Yeah, please.
The G in MAGA stands for Giardi.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Actually, the M stands for Mike.
What are you doing?
He's going to be people on his front lawn tonight, for God. I thought they would show up for his terrible candy take, not his political stance.
Oh, you see, that again shows a lack of
talent. We'll get there.
Yes. Hold on.
Focus on the trade deadline. What's going to happen?
So I think another piece is moving. I think one of the guys in the wide receiver room, most likely KJ Osborne, is gone. Yeah, I know. I was chuckling because Doug Kide, who does a fantastic job at the Herald, the beat reporter, Doug went to talk to Osborne maybe yesterday or 2 days ago, and the headline was like, you know, something like KJ Osborne reacts to his name being in trade talks. And I'm like, he reacts to the fact that he's in trade talks because he told him he wanted to be traded.
Right.
And then he told us he wanted to be traded.
Right.
So I did laugh about that. But yeah, like, there's no point. Obviously, they're getting Javon Baker. I think you're finally going to get your wish. Fitzy and Baker's going to be active and actually play some offensive snaps on Sunday. And I think, you know, you start to look at the totality of that room and you say, you know, KJ's the opportunity we've given him, he hasn't done anything with it. And now that he doesn't want to be here and kind of went social with that, like, okay, fine. See you later. Well, you know, you're not getting anything for him. We're talking like a, you know, probably a seventh round pick, but you know, clear space for the kids to get more snaps.
Could they bring anybody in? That I know Josina Anderson had the report. I was trying to sell the point where I think that because of their cap space and because of their kind of blank canvas of a roster, they really can listen to anything, and they should be acquiring, I don't even care if it's a swing tackle, a fifth corner, a future free safety, whatever. Do you think there's any chance we have to learn a couple new names as of early next week?
Yeah, I haven't hated the idea. I mean, their cap space is ridiculous. They're, you know, we know how free agency works. So even if they do spend a ton of money in free agency, you're not guaranteed that that's going to be this unbelievable haul and like you've changed the structure of your team. So if you're looking at guys, and you and I were texting yesterday, there are a couple names out there, guys that have been benched or are struggling that are, you know, high picks, former high first round picks. Emmanuel Forbes, the corner in Washington, who went ahead of Gonzalez, right? Like he's been benched. He's definitely not a part of their future plans. Now he weighs 170 pounds. I don't love that.
He weighs less than you.
With two phone books in his pocket soaking wet.
Yeah. He's like a 160s kind of guy. But would he have any value as like a potential free safety? Maybe that's a dumb question, but he's got a little length to him.
I don't think he can hold up physically. I think remember talking to McCourty about that and the idea that, you know, there's a tight end running full bore down the seam and you're coming across and he's 250, and, you know, Devin was a solidly built, whatever, 195, 200 pounds, right? But, like, Devin's shoulders are cooked because of those collisions over and over again. I think at 165, 170, you're probably asking too much. But, like, he's someone who had great ball skills in college. He's quick. He's long. Like, that might not
be
a bad dart throw to take. Kenyon Green, who played terribly last night again for Houston, was a first-round pick at guard. Like, I know you kind of probably feel like you have a lot of guards, but like a first-round talent who has had some success in the league, I don't know if that's a fifth-round pick or a sixth-round pick, I might be willing to throw that dart. You know, like those are the sorts of players I think you're talking about. And the flip side, you know, the one other name I do want to mention, so I was talking about possible guys moving, is I do think there's some actual truth to the John Jones stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that name just got thrown out there for the hell of it because we looked at it and said, oh, he's 30 and he's in the last year of his contract. And I think there are teams that are generally interested in him.
Yep.
And genuinely interested in him. And that's a tough one for me because
what cost? What would the return have to be?
I mean, I guess I would move him for no less than a fourth.
Same.
But even then, I'm still a little, and I'm not saying that, like, at this point of his career, that wouldn't be a smart business move. But in terms of what he brings to the locker room, and even this past weekend where he's dealing with the shoulder, but Duggar can't go, and you find that out officially 90 minutes before the game or 2 hours whenever he had his workout and they decided he couldn't go. And then John Jones is playing some safety.
Yep.
And they like to cross-train their guys, but there are very few guys that can go do that as fluidly as he can and make the right plays when he's doing it. And so between that versatility and then the leadership, you know, you saw him as the guy who broke the team down after the win, you know, with Juwan Bentley being out. Yep. Like, I feel like that locker room is a little rudderless. There's a lot of young guys, and having someone like him, who's one of the last remaining ties to great success here, there's some value in just keeping him and just saying, you know what? Yeah, maybe a fifth rounder would still be good value for him, but we can't do that. We shouldn't do that. We need him to keep teaching the young guys how to be pros because that's been a problem for them.
It's for all those reasons and more, the leadership, the quality of character, the positional versatility, the fact that he plays at a reasonably high level on the inside and the out, as well as safety, and what he can teach these guys, Mike, that makes me think, as badly as they may want that fourth from, let's say, I don't know, San Francisco, if they were to call, because they've got secondary issues like so many other teams do, I just can't see moving on from him at this point, even if you would, you know, net another pick. You know, you've already got an extra 3 and a 6. There'll be compensatory picks. The Patriots will be loaded up adequately next year. Why wouldn't you want to keep a guy like him around? You've got $140 million. You could afford another 2 or 3 year deal for Jonathan Jones as well. So I'm with you. And I would love to see them bring somebody in as well this week. Defensive tackle, another linebacker, like you said, a safety. This is a process. Well, this is an exploratory process.
The DT thing is interesting too, because I think Godchow's, That's real, too. I think there are teams that have called about Godchow. The question there is, again, like maybe one of the leanest positions on your football team, cycling in a lot of unknowns, you know, Eric Johnson,
Jacqueline Roy is going to be your best defensive tackle.
So that's – but then if you're telling me, okay, we're gonna be able to get good value for Godchow – you know, San Francisco, there's another team that could – they lost Javon Hargrave, haven't been great against the run. He'd be someone that would do pretty nice things for them as they're still in a win-now mode. But then that's when you have to do the ancillary move. That's when you have to bring someone in who has a longer resume and is a better player stature-wise than what you have on your roster. Because if you're going to move him and then go with that, then what are you telling the rest of your team? But if you move him and you bring in – a solid defensive tackle who's been in the league for 5 or 6 years and is a good player, then okay, guys, you know, like this made sense for us to get a fourth rounder for Devon. But at the same time, you know, we brought in a player that can still help us for the now when, as Mayo said, they want to be a team that is very hard to play over the second half of the season.
Okay, I got to ask you before we let you go. You had a controversial take last night about candy. I was trying to look it up. I didn't even know what one of the candies was. One of them was some soda pop crap thing, and the other was butter-flavored jelly beans.
Oh, butter those... popcorn jelly beans.
Okay, well, buttered popcorn jelly beans. Jelly Gross. Belly makes them. They are absolutely fantastic. They taste exactly like buttered popcorn.
That's amazing.
But they got that little sugar in them. Delightful. I can't believe you never had gummy colas before. People think like it's a wax thing. It's a gummy bear.
Yeah.
It's a gummy bear that's in the shape of a cola bottle, but it tastes like cold.
I don't like gummy.
So you can have a popcorn and soda like you're at the movies, but the texture is different, Andy. That's the whole idea. Haribo gummy cola. Yeah.
And those are really your favorite candies.
Bango.
You'd rather have that than like a Milky Way or a Reese's
Milky Way is so mid.
Peanut butter cup. Milky Ways are phenomenal.
I said that they're elite candies. I didn't say that I would rather prefer them. See, this is where reading comprehension is important. Oh, and I know we're asking a lot of you and others on that social media app to understand the words that I wrote, but I didn't say that I wouldn't rather have a peanut butter cup. I'm just saying those are two elite candies nobody talks about.
They're underrated, Andy. Basically,
those are Javon Baker and Jalen Polk.
Now, he's saying they're the Anthony Jennings and the Del Pettis of candies.
Mm. Ooh, Del Pettis, by the way, having a nice little moment here.
Yeah. They're he not. Is.
Okay. I agree with Judy Batista. She told you were wrong. I tell you were wrong. No, you can align yourself.
She flat out said, what's wrong with you?
And yeah. I said nothing. I said nothing and everything.
Tremendous reply, Mike.
Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. We bring him on for his Patriots takes. We also talk candy. And real quick, I need a yes or no answer before I let you go. Should the Bruins fire Jim Montgomery?
I think the message is lost at this point, and I don't love the roster, so I think he's been saddled with some aging players or a guy like Zadorov, who's dreadful, but it's probably time. I think they probably have no other choice but to make the coaching change, because you can't fire the 20 players in the room.
He's Mike Giardi, best-smelling man in the business, best interview on the phone in the business, good friend of the program. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, good luck to Jackson tonight.
Thank you.
See you, Mike.
Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal, here on the WEEI afternoon program, defending his candy takes and also saying a couple interesting things I thought about the trade deadline. We will get to those little nuggets from Mike Giardi in just a moment. Back after this.